From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Later tonight, Thanksgiving night open lines. You're part of it. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you, by the way. I'm glad we're here for you. Special thanks to my staff, Lisa, Tom, Dan, Lex, Stephanie, and those in the Network Operations Center, keeping this program rolling along for you in on their Thanksgiving night. So many thanks to them as well. Here's what's happening. Well, the traditions of Thanksgiving Day, isn't it? The turkeys go in the oven, the fixins are assembled, places are set, and families gather to celebrate a very cherished holiday. But one other Turkey Day tradition, getting ready for that mad dash of Black Friday and the biggest shopping weekend of the year. It may be dwindling. Whether Americans drop their forks and head for the mall or just sit back and watch football, well, it does matter this year more than most for the nation's stores because Thanksgiving falls on November 28th, didn't it? The latest possible date that there are now six fewer shopping days this holiday season than last. Let's check in with the expert on trends, Gerald Celente. What do you think, Gerald? And happy Thanksgiving to you.
And happy Thanksgiving to you and everyone. Well, it's going to be a lot like last year as far as the holiday season goes. We don't expect to see much movement in it. But, you know, there are wild cards out there, and it's really getting wild really out there. When you see what's going on over there in China with their air defense identification zone and Japan, and then the unrest in Thailand, and then the Ukraine turning away from the EU, and then the new dealings with Iran. And then you look at what else is going on. The Asian stock market just had its worst month since August. So everything is really on hold, and the hold is going to be what the Federal Reserve decides to do, whether or not they're going to pump more money into the system or taper.
Gerald, they're also saying that the internet apparently is growing in online shopping. Got to be crushing retail.
Oh, of course it's hurting it. Not only that, people with their apps, you know, they're shopping for prices when they go out. So there's definitely going to be a hit on the brick and mortars. Look at the numbers that came in from Walmart, from Kohl's. The numbers are there, George. They're showing the slowdown even before this happened. But you're seeing it at the money coming in at the top. You saw what happened with Tiffany's. They just showed a 50% increase in profits. Gee, I wonder why. Couldn't be because there are more billionaires out there now around the world and everybody else is losing money. So at the top, there's going to be more money being made. The middle's going to shrink and the bottom's really going to take a hit.
What do you think of Sears, by the way, Gerald? You know, was once a monster in this country. It's a shell of itself now, isn't it?
As is Penny's. It's a time it passed. By the way, George, one of the buildings I bought up here in Colonial Kingston is the 1774 Academy, and it was the first academic school in Ulster counties with Governor DeWitt Clinton went to. And anyway, it became a Sears outlet store, and that just goes to show you, you know, it went from an academy to a Sears, and then it went almost derelict. But Sears is a time that's come, you know. It's, you know, look, people have those homes that they still have out there that they bought with Sears kits that were great little homes for the price. So it's not a model that works anymore. And by the way, what they had in their strength, they lost. And the strength was they had great tools at one time. They had a market for both tools and appliances, but they let it slip.
Good point. Gerald, we'll talk to you before Christmas just to get an update from you on how things are going. Mixed signals from China. They apparently have sent warplanes to its newly declared air defense zone in the East China Sea. This is a vast zone, they announced this last week, which covers territory claimed by China and Japan and Taiwan and South Korea. China has said all planes transiting the zone must file flight plans and identify themselves or face defensive emergency measures, whatever that means. But Japan, South Korea, and the U.S. have already flown military aircraft through that area, and nothing has happened yet. Well, did I win my bet with Dr. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky, once billed as the comet of the century? Comet Ison apparently was no match for the sun. Scientists said images from NASA's spacecraft appear to show that the comet approaching for a slingshot around the sun, but that the trail of dust coming out of the other end. Where did it go? Let's check in with Dr. Sky. Did I win or not, Stephen?
Well, George, I would guess you would win, and proudly saying this to all the Coast listeners out there. I want to say, of course, happy Thanksgiving and happy Black Friday, but realistically, George, what happened if people weren't following this right around the time of their dinner today or whether they participated? We found out from SOHO images that it looks like the comet itself disintegrated as it got very close to the solar atmosphere. But the big but in all this is we did see something in SOHO images that shows something coming out the other end of the sun. So I would say here on our Coast audience this morning and tonight, I would concede, George, that right now I'll probably join in the requiem for Comet Ison. But I think realistically, if another day or so goes by where people may still get to see some material coming out of this particular comet, but for the most part, George, I'll simply say it, I think that you won the bet, and I'd be more than happy to provide a wonderful holiday toy or gift to a children's charity in the astronomy sense, and I'd love to do that because I would concede, yes, it looks like Comet Ison is going into the history books, sad to say, as a disintegrated comet. And right now, George, very quickly, it may, even if it remains somewhat particles intact, it's now called a pointless head. It's just an object that has debris maybe shooting out into space in all different directions. So I would simply say, George, you won the bet.
All right, Stephen, talk to you later. Thanks so much. And we'll have Tom get a hold of you and work out the bet, and we'll try to find a nice little charity to get them that telescope and let them have some fun. Richard C. Hoagland, of course, believes that that comet was possibly artificial, right? Some kind of craft. And the fact that something did come out of the sun, even though it's not the really the strong remains of the comet, I wonder what Richard has to say about that. Well, it's that time for our UFO update from none other than Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. How's the week been, Peter?
George, and happy Thanksgiving to you and to all our audience members tonight. I find it is a day to celebrate. I'm this country's worst, harshest critic, and I spent the day trying to focus on all the wonderful things we have here, and there are many, of course, so it is a day for Thanksgiving. A lot of interesting cases recently. In fact, just tonight I've taken 36 sighting reports from all across the country, George. Probably two-thirds of them of these strange red, orange, yellow lights. But I'd actually like to focus on something else tonight. People call the hotline all the time and want to know whether the National UFO Reporting Center is interested in sightings from years or even decades in the past. And I'd like to answer that question with an emphatic yes. We just received a very, very interesting report from a young woman. And this is an example of the type of thing that we enjoy getting from time to time. She was a student in the spring of 1968 at Franconia College in New Hampshire, up near Franconia Notch. Actually, my old stomping grounds back in the 60s when I was in high school. And she asserts that her boyfriend and his roommate were sitting on the balcony of their dormitory in the spring, probably about, I would guess, April or May of 1968, they saw a very, very bright and large disc-shaped object rise out of a nearby valley very close to Old Man of the Mountain, which was a celebrated rock form up there. Well, long story short, they went out on their bicycles the next day to investigate. They came back in a panic to the college, assembled all their friends, and apprised them that they had discovered a huge circle, about 100 feet or more in diameter, with three depressions out near the periphery of that circle, and the center of it was burned. Even the rocks had been turned black and crumbled. Very interesting case and an example of how much we enjoy receiving those reports from people back in the 60s, even the 50s and 40s. And we will have that case posted to our website in the very near future. More recently, on Tuesday, the 19th of November, two aviation mechanics who work for the military, in fact, they have 36 years experience with the military, mm-hmm. rebuilding electronics and avionics. They returned to their home in, I think it's Adel, Georgia. Long story short, George, they witnessed an object hovering above the home of one of these two gentlemen. They estimated it was a triangle. They estimated it to be 500 feet on a side. It was hovering motionless over his back lot. Because they're aviation mechanics, they're very familiar with the lighting patterns, standardized lighting patterns on military aircraft and all other aircraft for that matter. They said they've never seen anything like it, scared the living daylights out of them. We will have that report to the UFO Center website here very soon. Lots going on. About 14, maybe 18 states we have received reports from just tonight, again, of these yellow or orange or red fireballs. Call them what you will. The most recent one, 10:20 p.m. tonight, Central Standard Time, Barrington, Illinois, very close to Illinois, or Chicago, Illinois. A woman and her husband were in a hot tub. They estimated between 10 and a dozen red lights move in a procession, a very straight line across the sky. It'll take some time to prove that they weren't some kind of hot air balloon, so-called Chinese lanterns, but that's what's going on. And if any of our listeners have seen any of these things recently, I would be most grateful if they'd take a few minutes to write it out and submit a report using our online report form at ufocenter.com.
Super, Peter, thank you. I'm glad you're watching those skies for us. Up next, we're going to talk about Mothman and being grateful. How do those two tie in? Well, you'll find out in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast this Thanksgiving night. Brenda Knight with us. Grew up on a farm in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Now, you know that name. It happens to have been the place where one of the first Mothman sightings happened. She's the founder and publisher of the Viva Editions and the author of the American Book Award-winning Women of the Beat Generation. Her latest book is called The Grateful Table. We'll talk about that in a moment as well. Brenda, welcome. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, and happy Thanksgiving to you and all the Coast to Coasters.
What a fast year, isn't it?
Oh, I know. Time is definitely accelerating. We got to work on that.
So Mothman, and of course we're going to talk a little bit about gratefulness, but tell me about your connection with Mothman.
You know, I grew up in the shadow of the Mothman. When I was in the first grade, I first started hearing about him, and it was actually a relative of mine, cousin Steve, who was the first one to see the Mothman. And so it was a crazy story that hit this little town of 4,000 people like a bolt of lightning. And it was so scary that, you know, we just couldn't get over it and wanted to figure out what in the world was going on. But it's a wild story if you'd like to hear it.
I would love to hear it, Brenda. Go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, Point Pleasant is definitely one of the strangest little towns in America. And I think I even knew that as a first grader, just to, like, lots of hauntings and strange legends and all this and that. And but it was also a place where there was a secret military depot that my parents worked at. And we'll talk about that too. But after World War II, they just took a lot of the munitions, especially TNT, and just dumped it into a swamp north of town, which also just happened to be where kids would go parking, if you know what I mean. So cousin Steve and his girlfriend and another couple, you know, wanted to have a romantic evening in the toxic swamp north of Point Pleasant. And all of a sudden they felt these red lights, you know, they thought it was like cop lights, you know, the top lights on a cop car or you know, flashlights or something. And they turned around to look, and it wasn't flashlights. It was two glowing red eyes. And they were so scared that they, you know, just started driving the car, and us West Virginians like drive like bats out of hell. So they were driving like 80 miles, even 100 miles an hour. And this is where it gets even scarier, is that this creature kept pace with them, absolutely. Like, no matter how fast they drove, they couldn't outrun it. And in fact, the eyes kept peering right in the windshield, like at the same level. It wasn't moving, it was hovering. And they were so scared. I mean, again, they were like, you know, high schoolers. And they drove directly to the police station, which, you know, obviously shows how scared they were.
Oh,
and right before they got to like the police station, this creature like, you know, flew away, and they were, you know, babbling and telling the sheriff and the policeman, like, you know, this thing, this like bird, this like, you know, thing with wings that looked like a man with wings was hovering on top of our car. And the police thought it was, they were on an acid trip. And this is kind of, you know, funny to me. Like a few years ago, I went back and looked at like microfiche records and things like that, original documentation of the initial, you know, report from the police. And they were convinced that they were high, but these kids were anything but. They were stone cold sober, because they were the first people to see the Mothman.
Wow, that's a scary creature. What do you think, Brenda? What do you think it is or was?
Well, you know, I've had, you know, a couple of decades to think about it, and I actually ascribe to the theory. I think there's like 10 or 15 different theories about what the Mothman is, and I tend to think that he was a spirit messenger from the Native Americans, actually, because I think the real backstory to all the strangeness of that part of America is, you know, what happened there. There was a Native American chief that was murdered. He was called Chief Cornstalk, and he put a curse on the land in 1777. And he, you know, basically, you know, he was betrayed by the settlers. And so I believe that actually, you know, he was put down such a powerful curse, if you will, that the Mothman was sort of like his spirit animal, kind of, you know, and was a harbinger, and would warn right before really bad things would happen. And that seems to have borne out to be true, that, you know, when the Mothman showed up, things were about to get really bad, like the, you know, the Silver Bridge disaster, when a bridge fell through the Ohio River that was bumper to bumper with actually Christmas shoppers on Christmas Eve, like the greatest bridge tragedy of America at the time.
I sometimes think that the Mothman might also be the New Jersey Devil. What do you think?
How did you come to that, George?
Just a lot of similarities, Brenda. Just a lot. Tragedies occur, and, you know, people seeing this weird little creature. So, you know, maybe it exists. Maybe it's out there, but, you know, it could be all over the place. Or there could be more than one, whatever it is.
Yeah, there definitely could be. I mean, he definitely has been like all over parts of, like, you know, not just Point Pleasant, West Virginia, but other places in West Virginia and Virginia and Ohio. And then the sort of strangest new wrinkle, or at least to me, of the Mothman, you know, legacy is that, you know, there's even a theory that in 1967, the Mothman somehow gave a warning about 9/11. Have you heard that?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Yeah. I don't really know what to make of that, so I'd love to know, like, what you and the Coast to Coasters think on that one.
Well, we'll take calls with you next hour, so we'll see what happens. But do you see a connection between Mothman and the military at all?
I definitely do. As I mentioned a moment ago, my parents worked for, they called it the Navy Yard, which didn't really make any sense, but it was like this guarded, gated facility in Point Pleasant, right on the Ohio River, and it was a secret defense depot. I didn't know that as a child, and in fact, like, you know, both my parents worked there. That's how they met, and I wasn't, you know, none of us you know, I have two sisters, and none of us were allowed to know what our parents did for a living. I loved that. Whenever anyone would say, like, what your parents do, I would say, I'm not allowed to know, you know, because I just thought that sounded so cool as a kid. But when I got to high school, I said, like, come on, you guys, like, you've got to be able to tell me what you do. And so my dad said, well, okay, I can tell you, but you, you know, you really can't discuss it. And of course, here I am telling it on Coast to Coast. Oh, but
telling the world. We're going to come right back with you, Brenda. We're going to take this quick break. We'll talk more about Mothman and, of course, your latest work, The Grateful Table. It is Thanksgiving. And welcome back to Coast, Brenda Knight with us. Brenda, talk a little bit more about Mothman, then we'll get into The Grateful Table, which is perfect on Thanksgiving night, of course. So back to this military possible involvement. In what way do you think it's tied in?
Well, I think that for one thing, like, my parents worked at this secret depot, and where it turned out, like, the big secret they did was they were working with the dispensation and storage of plutonium, which was quite a shocker for me. And so, you know, I realized I had my moment to ask my dad as many questions as I could about this, you know, Defense Department secret depot in Point Pleasant. And I mean, because it had its own airport, its own shipping yard, its own train yard. And, you know, so I just went for it. And I said, do you ever see any UFOs, Dad? Like anything like that at the depot? And he was silent for a moment. And he said, yes. And I said, which kind? And he said, the cigar-shaped ones. And then he cut me off. But I realized that, like, it was the same, you know, depot of his that they had dumped all the TNT and everything in the area, the TNT area where the Mothman was first seen. So I feel the connection is that, you know, at first, like, us country people thought that the Mothman was a mutant sandhill crane that had, like, come out of, like, the toxic swamp, really. We just thought, like, well, you know, of course, it's just a natural thing, but it's a mutant because of what the military did to our town. And so I think the connection is, you know, again, because I ascribe to the theory that the Mothman is a Native American spirit messenger, is that he's also saying, like, you know, you got to watch out because, like, there's something going on in your town that isn't natural and you should know about it. And so all this was, like, bubbling up at the same time, like 1967, 68, very, very strange time. And meanwhile, the whole time, you know, behind everyone's back, like, nobody else in the town knows about this secret military depot that had dumped stuff, and that's where the Mothman was first seen. So there's got to be a connection.
Well, let's check in also. Are you still getting a lot of UFO reports in that area?
You know, they've died down a little bit, but I think in, like, the 60s and the 70s, it was like and also in Ohio, like, right across the river, like, that whole Ohio River Valley had the highest number of UFO sightings actually in the world. I think that, like, Russia and also, like, you know, somewhere else, like, was, like, second and third. But, you know, that was definitely at one point, like, the phenomena was out of control, like, dozens of sightings a week. And, like, you know, even my dad, like, as I got him to admit that he'd seen them many times where he worked.
Where he worked, really?
Right, at the Defense Depot where he worked. He said that's where they appeared.
Well, there's no question that they keep showing up all over the place. So there might be a tie-in there as well. But Mothman, to me, comes across as something a little sinister, maybe somewhat dangerous. How about you?
Well, I mean, I sure would have been scared if I saw his two glowing red eyes, like, coming through my car. But I don't, I mean, I, you know, I would be scared to death and driving 100 miles an hour. But I still felt that he was trying to warn people of something. But, you know, warn people that, like, the bridge was going to fall. There was going to be a bombing. There was going to be yet another flood. Like, you know, I mean, it was just, it was incredible, like, how many tragedies happened in that little town, in that little area.
Well, that's true. Now, let's talk about, in the time we have this hour, Brenda, The Grateful Table. Here it is, Thanksgiving night. A lot of people have been grateful. People have had friends, family over in most cases. Tell me a little bit about what's going on this planet. Are people grateful or not?
I definitely think there's a movement towards gratitude. I think it's been bubbling up for like 15 years or so. And I think it's because it's so easy. I mean, you can turn your life around with gratitude. I know I did, but you can be worried or filled with anxiety or troubled. And if you just stop for 1 minute to think about what you're grateful for, it's going to turn your life around. Like, for example, may I ask you, George, in this moment, what are you grateful for?
Waking up in the morning.
Okay.
I'm trying to be somewhat facetious there, but I think your health is probably the most important thing, because without it, you can't take care of the people you care about. And
that's exactly true.
So, you know, you get up in age, waking up in the morning is, you know what? That's a pretty good feat, I think. But you know what?
You would love the Grateful Table, because BJ Gallagher, I included like a little poem from her in the book. And the very first line is, anytime I'm vertical, I'm grateful. And she's saying exactly that if she can get up in the morning and feel good and count on her health, then she feels very blessed. And I think that's true for us all.
What do you mean by daily gratitude?
Well, for me, I start every single morning with a gratitude practice, because I start with counting my blessings and saying what I'm grateful for, and then setting my intention for the day. Like today, I knew I was going to have a dinner with some loved ones and good friends. And so, you know, I just spoke my gratitude, visualized, you know, what was going to happen today, even including being on this radio show. And I was so looking forward to it. And that simple act, that simple ritual that I do every morning really turned things around for me, because a few years ago, like less than 10 years ago, I was in a real trouble. I was financially destitute. I had lost my boyfriend to cancer. Oh. I was going to live in my car. I was heading for homelessness.
No way.
And yes, seriously. And things were just so bad. And it was right as it was like 2007, like right as the economy was getting ready to tank, like the beautiful real estate bubble that, you know, took many people down, unfortunately. So I was heading right for that, like circling the drain. And fortunately, I'm a big reader, and I, you know, edit and acquire books. And I started reading material, and I was reading Tony Burrows. I think you had him on a year ago, The Code. And I started doing that ritual, setting intentions, stating gratitudes, counting my blessings. And I did it every single day, and it totally worked. And now I feel unbelievably blessed and so grateful that I wanted to share that in the Grateful Table.
Now, when it turned around for you, do you think you did it, or is there some outside force out there that kind of helped you because you tapped into it?
I think both. I actually think that what you're looking for is also looking for you. But you have to create the conditions with your consciousness. You have to, like, set your mind to it. And also, you have to edit what you say and what you think a little bit. For example, you know, if you go around thinking like, well, I'm not going to have love in my life. Well, you know what, George? You're not, because you created that reality. So you just have to, like, become more conscious and more aware. And the more practice you do, the better it gets. And so I think it's both. Set the conditions, be very conscious and specific. And good things will happen as long as you set the stage for it.
That's a good point, though. I mean, you really have to set that stage in order to go out and accomplish these things. How quickly did these things turn around for you after you were almost at rock bottom?
Oh, absolutely. I started with two friends, and we started like a gratitude circle. And one of them, Mandy, she wanted a bookcase for her baby. She had just had a baby. Her husband got laid off. Again, this is like the 2007 when the U.S. economy is, you know, just getting ready to slide down.
Yep, ready to collapse.
Ready to collapse. So she wasn't working, and her husband wasn't working, and she just had a baby. She wanted a bookcase. My other friend wanted a new job. I wanted a job, a home. I wanted to like deal with my grief. My list was huge. So we did our gratitude circle. The next morning, I get an email from Mandy saying, "You're not going to believe this, but I walked outside of my apartment building and there was a white bookcase exactly like I intended for." She said, "This really works." So in my case, I had to like double down and like, you know, do it for, it would say a month. But, you know, it turned around for me in a month.
That's
and
amazing.
I know people that have had like incredibly wonderful things that they got through this daily gratitude practice. It's so powerful. And, you know, I do, you know, tell about my turnaround in the Grateful Table because I want everybody to know this worked for me. It can work for you too, George.
Well, you're also right about one thing. If you bring that black cloud over you, it's not going to happen, brother.
You know, people do it. We get in our ruts. I mean, we all have our problems. We all have worries. We all have anxiety. And you can sort of get a little unconscious and just, you know, start, you know, get a little negative, you know, run a little negative program. But we have to, like, just be more conscious. I mean, I think that's really ultimately what your, you know, Coast to Coast is all about, is, like, you know, more consciousness, global consciousness, awareness, what's really going on. And we might not be able to control things like, you know, the banks and all that, but we can control what we think, what we say, our own actions, and our intentions. You can sure control that, and you should.
Let's talk about some of your favorite phrases from the Grateful Table that so many people can use at this time of, in their lives.
Absolutely. One of my favorites is Daphne Rose Kingma's. It's so beautiful and simple. And hers just says, "Saying thank you brings more love into the world." What a powerful, simple, beautiful statement. That's definitely one of my favorites.
Well, you know what? It is. Whether it's in an email or somebody does something for you, as simply as opening up a door. You know, a little thank you
Absolutely.
Goes a long way, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I mean, I think at the end of our lives, what really matters is like how well did you love? Did you love enough? Did you give enough? It doesn't matter what's in your bank account, what car is in your garage or any of that. Did you give love? Did you give enough? And so if you think about it that way, it makes you want to do exactly that. You know, what Daphne Rose Kingma said, and like bring more love into the world, and gratitude and giving go hand in hand.
There are some people, Brenda, who are successful financially, but they're not happy.
I know that's very true. You can see it on their faces. You know, you may see them at a fancy restaurant or something, and they're not smiling and laughing. They're probably worried about like what's going on in their stock portfolio because of like the Asian stock market or whatever, you know, because they have, you know, they're actually burdened. They're probably weighed down by it, right?
Yeah, that could be. That could be. So what techniques, because that's one of the things we love to do here, what techniques to get people turned around? So they can start, you know, changing their life a little bit for the better.
Well, definitely. I mean, there's ways that you can cultivate a grateful heart. You know, we did that a few minutes ago by just thinking immediately about what you're grateful for. Some people can keep a gratitude journal. Actually, I helped work on one. It's called Living Life as a Thank You, My Journal. And it has like other techniques like keeping a spiritual bucket list. And I don't have one yet, but like if I were to have a bucket list, it would definitely have being on Coast to Coast.
Oh, well, you know, this is a great time of year to get things started. You know, it is the festive time now, and you know, in the past, I could see it on people's faces. You know how upbeat they were and things like that. Well, they're a little more uptight. Do you sense that?
I do. It's like the holidays have become, you know, extra work or something. And that's not the, you know, what they're supposed to be at all. It's supposed to be a time to, like, just gather your family and, like, see your loved ones and your friends and go visit people and actually rest and recuperate. But I think somehow it's gotten out of control in our society. And it ends up being like, you know, like instead of like your regular to-do list, then there's your holiday to-do list. And, you know, we our culture, like somehow, you know, I think the, you know, the intentions are originally good, but maybe that Calvinism that was informing America at like the very beginning, which is all about like, work really hard, just keep working, and then you'll get what you deserve. So we apply that too much, like even to like the holidays. It should be like merriment and love and you know, and joy. But somehow the joy has gotten left out of the equation. I definitely agree. I see it.
Well, Brenda, you know, as we look forward, I think, to a rapidly changing planet here, do you think we're going to get more people or less to become grateful and friendly?
I personally will set intentions that like they become more grateful, but I know they are because I sort of track trends in my own little way, like being in publishing as an editor. You know, it's incumbent upon me to like notice what people's interests are, and I've been noticing the, you know, what I call the gratitude movement for about 15 years. I think actually Oprah Winfrey herself helped, you know, when she had her regular network show, she would talk about keeping gratitude journals and having an attitude of gratitude. Then when The Secret broke out a few years ago, you know, first it was like the DVD before it was the book, and the secret, actually the key to it is gratitude. And so I think when people like are studying this and opening up their minds to, you know, movies like The Secret and books like Tony Burrow's The Code and even like, you know, The Grateful Heart and Grateful Table, they, you know, they realize that it's easy. You don't have to go sit on a mountaintop and meditate for 6 months. They can just like each day incorporate at least one or two gratitude practices, and their life is going to get more positive. And there's actually even like Dr. Michael Emmons, who's a physician, did a study that proves that it makes you healthier and it does wonderful things to your neurotransmitters. So actually gratitude makes you feel better and makes you smarter. And I don't think it can get any better than that, George.
No, it can't. And there's no question if you start acting better towards other people, you're going to change too, aren't you?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the traditions too that I still see not quite as much, but you know, people still do volunteer. Like during the holidays, I usually go to Glide Memorial in San Francisco and serve in the kitchen because, you know, there's no less people struggling. In fact, I feel like in America, people are struggling harder than ever. Financially,
well, yeah,
and there's more hunger and hardship. So I think this is the holiday season for us that have whatever we have, we should share it and give back.
Well, we should be doing that every day, not just the holiday season.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And they have to do that. And so you've picked yourself up. Things are better. You happy?
I am. I even intended up a really good boyfriend, and I'm so grateful to him. And because I have to tell you that, like, I thought, you know, somehow I had in my mind that, like, you only get one love of your life, and that, like, mine passed on. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm off the market. Like, good. Wow. Didn't think that would happen so soon and was very, very sad. And but, you know, I had this spark of hope in my heart, and I actually, you know, incorporated that into my gratitude practice, and it's worked out pretty nicely.
All right, Brenda, we're going to come back in a moment, and we're going to take phone calls on Mothman. And also, if folks want to share their stories of being grateful, we can do that before we get into open lines on Coast to Coast AM.